SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Wednesday, the 25th of September 2024 from the SBS newsroom. The Australian share market fell today by 0.2%. We'll have the details with Hebe Chen from IG Markets in a few moments. But first to inflation, where the ABS monthly CPI indicator fell from an annual rate of 3.5% to 2.7% last month. That's within the RBA's 2 to 3% target band, but the underlying rate also declined about from 3.8% to 3.4%. So with the details, I spoke with Jonathan McManaman, an economist at Barrenjoey. So first of all, should we be excited about inflation finally falling into the Reserve Bank's target band of 2 to 3%? I mean, first of all, this is just an indicator and it only is the headline rate, right?
That is true. But I guess when we're trying to think about people's cost of living and what they're actually experiencing, headline inflation is probably still one of the best measures that we have of what price pressures people are actually feeling on a day-to-day basis. So obviously headline inflation falling from 3.5% to 2.7% is a really good thing on that front. And really that reflects the fact that households just are paying less for things. Primarily within this data is around electricity prices and fuel prices.
So where are we starting to see inflation come off and where is there still pressure?
So we are seeing electricity prices fall quite significantly because of those government subsidies. We've obviously seen global oil prices fall a lot as well. And you're seeing that now on your at the Bowser as well, with prices falling quite significantly. But what is quite encouraging about this data as well is that we're starting to see it broaden a little bit into what we would call market services. So services that are affected by the underlying economics. And where we're seeing a little bit softer price pressures is around eating out, takeaway food, household services. And this is quite important because it means that the price pressure disinflation that we're starting to see is broadening beyond those goods measures that we'd seen earlier in the year.
Ultimately, what do you think the Reserve Bank will feel about this?
So they'll look straight through the declines in prices that we've seen within electricity prices and within fuel, because those things are volatile. And we know, of course, they're being affected by government subsidies. Where they will focus is in the core prices that we see within the basket. And that really relates to a number of the services that we measured during the month. And on that front, we did see some good news just around those market services. So I think they'll find some level of encouragement in the data. And indeed, we have an outlook for quarterly trim mean inflation, which is the best measure that they have for underlying inflation, to come in just below the RBA's forecast for the quarter.
Okay, so ultimately, what does it mean for interest rates moving on then? Does this inflation indicator change things?
It doesn't change too many things based on our view. We had, going into this data, the expectation that we would see an RBA cut come February next year. So still a little while away and not until the new year. But this data really supports that view. And it hasn't shifted our view to think that it would come later and indeed any time earlier.
That is Barrenjoey economist Jonathan McManaman. And the Australian share market fell, but only just. The S&P ASX 200 at 8,126, that's down 0.2%. With the reaction, I spoke with Hebe Chen from IG Markets. Hebe, first of all, how did the market react to today's CPI data?
Well, today's Australian market mostly up about 0.1%, and that have to largely thanks to the material sector jumping up as much as 3%. But on the other hand, we're seeing quite different pictures in the financial sector showing about 1.7% drop. And what the impact for today's CPI is that helped to widening the divergence in between the financial sector, also the material sector. And that's because the fundamental reason that we're seeing a softer or cooling CPI means that we could bring the interest rate cut much earlier than expected. A lower interest rate often in the commodities favor, but also reduce the interest margin for the big banks. And they helped widening the different view for these two largest sectors in the Australian market.
The iron ore price, after being suppressed for some time, is really rallying. Why? How important is this? And how is it being reflected in the share market? I noticed you mentioned just earlier that there seems to be a rotation of stocks as well, going from banks into mining.
Yes, today is also a big day for iron ore because we're finally seeing back above the $100. But given that it has dropping about 27% year to date for the iron ore, in the past 7 days, we do have major two events that are happening to impacting the iron ore prices. One is the Fed rate cut that happened last early Thursday. We're seeing the iron ore price jumping up as much as 3.6%. Another one, which is more recent, but also huge impact for the iron ore, is China's economy support, which is the biggest one in 2 years. That helped to improve and recover the iron ore price by as much as 6%. In terms of longer-term impact for that, we have already seen quite a positive momentum has shown in the mining sectors, which everyone expecting that probably the worst time is over for our big miners. But moving forward, what we also have to see is whether or not the China's economy can really, really making a material impacting boosted by this recent support. And they will potentially stage a longer term recovery for the iron ore price.
Any other company news you're keeping an eye on today?
Well, firstly, I still keep looking at what happened this week, a big news for the two supermarkets, Coles and Woolworths. We finally seen share prices stabilize a bit, but I do trust there's quite more headwinds ahead for them. Another one is the FMG share prices, not only because the share price jumping as much 6.2%, but that's also because that they have announced a big $2.8 billion of the upgrade for the facilities, equipments, which sort of polish their brand as the green energy supporter. And I think that will help these companies to recover even more for their share price, given that they have defend that the major output for the company also have the ESG focus for that.
And finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, I am still quite positive for the safe haven assets, the precious metals, despite we're seeing the gold prices has been jumping up to the record high. Silver price has improved about 27% this year. But we look at what's on the horizon for the next 2 months. We have the US election coming up. We have the US dollars will continue to weakening. Either it's a 50 basis point more cut or 75. I think all these major ingredients will sort of guarantee that the ascending journey for the silver or gold will continue at least to the end of the year.
It's Hebe Chen there from IG Markets. From the share market, we go to the property market now, where Australia's market may be out of reach for some as prices continue to climb. But a new global report says the risk of a bubble forming in Australia's biggest city is only moderate. So a global study of 25 cities by investment bank UBS found Miami, Tokyo and Zurich as having the highest risk. Miami on top because of growing supply, rising insurance costs and concerns about higher sea levels. And that's after prices there surged 50% since 2019. There's a perceived elevated risk in LA, Toronto and Geneva, while it's only moderate in Sydney, despite having the worst affordability level of those in the study. For more, I spoke with Stephen Kobat, an investment consultant at UBS. Stephen, so we often hear about how Sydney property is unaffordable, yet this report says that Sydney is only in a moderate risk of being in a housing bubble. Run us through what this means and, more importantly, why.
Yeah, sure, Ricardo. So we have done a report based on 25 global cities looking at various measures, and indeed in terms of financial affordability, Sydney screens as one of the worst. Now, that can predominantly be attributed to a pronounced housing shortage that we have, but it doesn't mean we're going to have a change in conditions anytime soon. In fact, with interest rates coming down, and indeed the attractiveness of Sydney continuing with some large infrastructure projects, that's likely to see more people coming. So it's absolutely no concern for prices immediately.
So a tight rental market, for example, and this shortage of housing alleviates the risk of a bubble?
Yeah, well, the housing rental market is going to see people interested in investing in that industry. What we've seen over the last couple of years globally is that rents have actually gone up over the last couple of years. And that's also driven by some of the supply factors. The cost of investing, the cost of building means that it's not easy to bring on that supply. And so the rental prices are still tracking and are likely to track a little bit higher until we see a change in those supply dynamics.
What will it take for a bubble to occur and then pop?
Yes, and it's notoriously difficult to pick a bubble, and even more so to when things will change. But historically, there certainly have been examples of bubbles where things have come unwound. It's generally going to take some exogenous events. It could be a macroeconomic slowdown, policy changes that can lead to changes in the dynamics, which could see some unwinding. But certainly on current supply demand dynamics, we don't see any challenges immediately.
What's the general global trend and how does Sydney compare?
Globally, we have seen a bit of a change depending on the region we're talking about. Certainly out of Europe, we have seen housing affordability come back, come down, made more affordable, I should say. They have seen corrections of up to 20% in real terms. So inflation adjusted, inflation has been very high, so that makes a difference. The US has actually seen an extension of some of the risks of bubble. They've become more accentuated. And Asia Pacific has generally been reasonably stable.
And of those cities that are at a high bubble risk, I think you've got Miami at the top of the list in the US, for example. What do they have in common?
Yeah, they all have, I guess, peculiar supply and demand dynamics that are going on at different times. Miami is the highest risk of a bubble, and it is indeed pointed to the fact that there's a lot of people interested in moving there. They can be attracted to the climate, that the tax environment can also be appealing, but there's only so much beachfront property in Miami that people can find. So that is going to continue to be a constraint. And another city that is high on the list is Zurich. Zurich also is challenged by the supply of available property. So that's probably the common theme globally that's seeing challenges, the supply.
That's Stephen Kabat there from UBS.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.